we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1507 and continue taking swipes at this. The newest information we have here today from Chris is a table that's on OLIS that has the impacts on some of the issues that we're considering adding to 1507. So, Chris, I'm going to let you present this.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So the table that you have in front of you is just a first shot at the preliminary tax credit impact estimates for the drafted bill, Senate Bill 1507, a couple of amendments to the bill that the committee has seen, and then a couple of other tax credit bills that have been discussed in the building, one on the Senate side and one on the House side. So the main core of the bill, the first four lines there, sections 1, 2, 3, and 4, have no revenue impact. Those are the technical changes that were included in the original bill. So they have no revenue impact. I'm basically saying that these policy changes would be consistent with what the state economist has in the revenue forecast. The Wolf depredation, that's the one that makes some changes to that tax credit, and the revenue impact is from increasing the annual tax credit cap from about $37,000 to $38,000 to $200,000. And so I have that trending up for the first couple of years before it hits the $200,000 a year. So in 15-17, that's a $100,000 loss. Then that grows to a $300,000 and $400,000 loss in the next two, in the subsequent two biennia. The biomass manure tax credit, there is a dash three, and that's in OLIS. It is the same policy as was discussed last week in the dash one. There was just a technical problem with how the dash one was drafted. So this was redrafted, but the policy is identical to the dash one.
Can you spend a second on that and tell us how the given puts and takes will work in that digester thing? Because the rate of, goes down on the wet ton, what are we calling that, capo feed? And then we have the tax credit for the digesters. Can you walk us through the mechanics of how that would actually play out on the ground?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under current law, the biomass tax credit is in effect through tax year 2017. So it sunsets on January 1st, 2018. So the last tax, under current law, the last year that somebody, a taxpayer, can claim that credit would be tax year 2017. And the tax credit rate is $5 per wet ton. So under current law, it's $5 per wet ton through tax year 2017. And the revenue impact then goes to zero in 2018 and beyond because the tax credit goes away under current law. What the amendment does is for tax year 2017, it reduces the rate from $5 a wet ton to $3.50 a wet ton. So in tax year 2017, there's a revenue gain of $1.7 million. And I have that's on the table there under fiscal year 2017-18. And that's basically a timing issue. It's tax year 2017. The tax credit is less than under current law, so that raises $1.7 million. But we expect that to really hit the revenue stream in fiscal year 2017-2018. While the policy, the law change, takes effect for the last 6 months of this biennium, by the time it actually hits the revenue stream, we'll be into the 17-19 biennium. So that's the $1.7 million revenue gain. And then the subsequent revenue loss numbers that go from about $4 million to about $5 million for each of the next years, that has to do with the extension of the tax credit because it is extended through tax year 2021. And that growth is just the projected growth that we've seen in the use of that tax credit. So the trade-off there is there's a one-year revenue gain and then a subsequent revenue loss. And the way that plays out, it doesn't affect the 15-17 biennium revenues, and so that impact is zero. There's a $2.6 million revenue loss in 2017-19. That is the positive $1.7 million and the negative $4.3 million combined to a $2.6 million revenue loss. And then in 19-21, it's a revenue loss of about $9.5 million. And that's just the addition of the 4.6 and the negative 4.6 and the 4.9. So there's a revenue gain in 1 year and revenue loss for the extension of the tax credit. So that was it for the bill and the amendments that the committee has heard related to that bill. the next two tax credits. The first one is the film and video credit, and I've included that in here again with the timing of the revenue impact. And on this one, it would allow every July, the film and video office sells the tax credits, and right under current law, they're allowed to sell $10 million in tax credits. The bill, as drafted, would increase that to $14 million. So this summer, they would be able to sell an additional $4 million in tax credits that would apply largely to tax year 2016. And so we would really expect those to hit the revenue stream.
Why does it say 3.5 instead of 4?
Historically, when I track the credits, we have the amount claimed and then the amount used to actually offset liability. And it's about 90%. And as expected, as the amount of the tax credit has grown, the usage has tended down a little bit. So back in the day when only $1 million was sold, it was 98% was being used on tax returns. But as we've hit $10 million, we're down to about 90% get used. And there is a carry forward. So people will buy the credit, and at the end of the day when they do their taxes, they find that while they may have purchased $1 million in tax credits, they can only use 990,000. And then they carry forward some. So that's a mechanical piece that I include in here. Again, trying to get as accurately as possible, reflecting the impact on the revenue stream, but that does go up to the $4 million. And again, that affects the 16-17 year because that would affect the 2016 tax year returns.
I have a question on that.
Is there a question?
So, because they are apples and oranges, but still in the fruit basket between, for example, biomass and film. And I'm not suggesting this. I'm just trying to understand all the dynamics. If you have the film and video credit, and they normally sell them in July, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really, the only reason or the only way that it would not be booked in the present biennium, right, is as if it was actually moved an entire year down the road. Is that not correct?
Correct.
Because you couldn't, move it to January 1 of the next year. Like if you move the sale from July 1st or month of July this year to January of 2017, it still would not be because they're selling the credit and encumbering that in the present biennium, right?
Right. It's driven by the tax year. So we're in the middle of – historically, they've sold them in July.
Right.
And people are going through their 2016 tax year, and they're looking at their revenue, at their income, and their potential
right.
taxes. So if they can buy it in 2016 and apply it to the 2016 tax year, that's how it affects this biennium. If it's pushed out to a date where it would only affect, where it could not affect the 2016 tax return and first affect their 2017 tax return, that's when it would be pushed back. So the year delay is correct.
So it would be a year delay, not a six-month delay. Because,
right.
for example, in the previous one, we have a six-month delay, but that six-month delay actually pushes it into the next tax year. And because we're selling, because the film people are selling the credit, right?
Right.
It really takes effect almost as soon as they sell it.
Potentially.
Right. Right. So there is no cost savings, I guess is what I'm saying. If you move the film, the sale of the credit from July to January, right, there is no real cost savings in the biennium.
I don't think so. I would have to look at that. The statute isn't entirely crystal clear on if I buy the tax credit in January, do I have to apply it? Which tax year can I apply it to?
Mm-hmm.
The history of the tax credit has been people are buying the tax credit in the summer of that year, and they'll apply it to that tax year because they have a good sense of what their liability is, or a better sense than earlier in the year.
Well, interesting follow-up, Mr. Chair. That's interesting. Because that would indicate, at least to me, am I missing something here? That would indicate instead of acquiring the tax credit before you encumbered your expenses for a movie, you're actually, as a planning in advance, you're actually doing it in the middle of when your expenses are.
Well, this is one where the tax credit goes to people, they're sold at auction.
Right.
And we have two groups of people. You'll have the filmmakers
right.
that benefit from the funds that go in from the money that goes into the fund.
Right.
The tax credit recipients don't have to have anything to do with the movie making. They can just be John and Jane Doe Public who buy the tax credit. And that tax credit, the receipts from that tax credit go into the fund that the film and video office then uses to distribute to the movie making industry or those businesses.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So what I think you're telling me is it's a I guess bicaffrated is the right word. It's a bicaffrated process in which the two are separate. And what I really think I hear you mean is depending on the future value of a credit, because we have credits that are all over the place, is that the date of implementation or the utilization of the credit could be, for a better word, and we'll use this term, manipulated. You following what I'm saying? I think you do. What I'm saying is you could sell it here, but it can only be used at a different date. Is that not correct?
Statute, I think
we make law, right.
Yeah, the statute can be changed so that it can be sold on this date and it can only apply to certain tax years.
Check, right. All right.
That would, as my read of statute, that would require a statutory change.
Right, because unfortunately, in the topic that many of us don't like with Betsy and things like that, you know, we were selling credits and people weren't going to plan to use them for 2, 4, 6 years, moving them all over the place. That's why they have those CPAs that always confuse us. Right, okay, I got it. Thank you.
Senator Bertschinger.
Kind of to pile on what Senator Boquist did, also.
We already did biomass, by the way.
Yeah, corporations that have a different tax year, it could be advantageous for them. If they don't have a January 1 tax year.
It could be. Historically, this credit has not been much used by corporations, but your point is correct.
Follow-up? How much are these tax credits historically been sold for?
Going off the top of my head and talking with Tim Williams, the executive director, last time they were sold at around, I think, 98%, 98 cents on the dollar. That's a pretty good auction.
That's pretty good. Close. So the savings is only 2%. That's not very much.
And there are the occasional stories of people paying more than 100% for the tax credit.
Because of some federal tax benefits.
I think the safest answer to that is it's an open tax question. I'm not sure that they're interpreting law correctly. And it has to do with it definitely has to do with the interaction with federal law, the federal AMT, and federal itemized deductions.
And they like film.
I'm sorry?
They like film.
That could be too.
Okay.
Chris, and I know you don't have the answer here, and DOR is never very helpful in this particular question, but as Senator Riley just put out, they like film. Do we have a good idea of the income brackets and the type of entities that like film? And what I'm saying here is that, I mean, who's buying the credit? Because it's obviously applying in some tax bracket. Are there LLCs? Are they individuals? Are they rich people? I mean,
they do tend to be higher income people, and I can get more detailed information for you. We know who claims the credit. And I do have some distributional information. They tend to be higher. In terms of the LLC, I'd have to do a little more digging to find out, looking at the tax returns to find out if they're wage only or if they're where their income comes from. Mm-hmm. They are hiring people who are buying the credit.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I don't want Chris to have to dig into the LLC, but if he has some other data that he's analyzed, I think it would be interesting, at least for the members, to see it, because I think what I'm driving at here is that this could be a bracket of individuals that, for better word, bank credits and use these credits through their CPAs. They aren't going to H&R Block. I mean, they have professional staff that are doing this. And my question is if this is that higher income deal, are these people, or what is the value? Is it 98% in theory today? Or is it something they're banking for 18 months or 2 years out, or 3 years forward, 3 years back? And the reason for that is then the implementation of the tax year. Is if you could sell credits and then it wasn't against our accounts short term versus long term, there are some implementation things right there that would be very advantageous. And I'm tap dancing here because we're in a public hearing, but I think Chris has a good idea of what I'm talking about.
I can dig in and dig into it and get some more information on the claims.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The last one is the Public University Venture Development Fund, and this was heard on the House side this session. It's similar to the policy that you you heard through JTAX last session, and the difference is that this is the tax credit that was not extended through the 2015 process. They had asked for a larger cap to the tax credit. This bill, 4072, would maintain the current program cap, or that had existed before sunset, of $8.4 million in tax credits that could be sold or awarded. And it does a couple of other policies where it increases the taxpayer cap. It changes the structure of the credit from being capped at $50,000 and taken over 3 years to being capped at $600,000 and potentially taken in 1 year, but with a 3-year carry forward. So it makes the tax credit more attractive that way. The program cap is unchanged, and that program cap is $8.4 million, and they have already sold, or about half of that has already been used. So the potential revenue impact that you're looking at in extending the tax credit 6 years is about a $4 million revenue impact, and it's just a question of the timing of that revenue impact, when it would occur, when they would make contributions that would then be tied to a tax credit that would be claimed on tax returns. And so right now I have that ramping up for the first couple of years and then leveling off at about $900,000 a year. And over those 5 years, that total is $4 million. And the reason it's ramping up is just because the tax credit has sunset, and so they can't market the credit right now as saying if you make this contribution, you can get the tax credit. So there would be a lull in their activities for receiving funds.
Can you walk us through the mechanics and remind us how that one works?
This one is if a taxpayer makes a contribution to one of these funds for one of the universities, public universities, they get a 60% tax credit. So if I were to make a $100,000 contribution to OSU or U of Oregon or OHSU, I could get $60,000 tax credit. And under prior law, that $60,000 tax credit would have to be claimed over 3 years, $20,000 each year. But under the changes proposed, at least as 4072 is drafted, I could claim that $60,000 in 1 year. And if I can't use it because of insufficient liability, I have 3 years to carry that forward. And the bill makes some other administrative changes in terms of the allocation of the credits to the different universities.
All right. And that contribution that you made to OSU goes into a venture capital fund that they all separately manage to act just like a regular venture capital fund.
Right. Each university manages their own fund, and they use those funds to seed, to try and commercialize research activities at their university into private entities that would return a profit.
All right. And you said something that I didn't quite get, that they're halfway through their $8 million.
This one is a little bit unusual in that there isn't an annual program cap. There is one kind of a timeless program cap, and the way it's structured is that it has to do with the debt to the general fund, so no more than $8.4 million in outstanding credits can exist at any one time. And right now they have issued about $4.4 million in tax credits. This program also has a repayment mechanism where as the businesses earn a profit, some of that money comes back and gets repaid to the general fund. As money gets repaid to the general fund, that creates more room under the cap. So this $8.4 million cap is just a permanent straight line, and they can issue tax credits up to that level. But once there are $8.4 million in outstanding credits, then the universities can't issue any more tax credits unless there's some repayment. So, for example, if we're at that $8.4 million and University of Oregon repays the general fund $1 million, then they can issue another $1 million in tax credits. It's almost kind of a continuing appropriation type of situation.
Senator Bo, please.
Chris, you explained the carry forward on the venture development fund. You know, it's 3-year carry forward. That's once the credit is sold on the film and video, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's you can carry that tax credit forward 3 years?
Correct.
Okay.
Senator Burcher.
So, Chris, at the end of the day, when all the dust settles, we're about this bill would wind up with about $20 million in tax credits, correct? that you have 19.7 at the end of that 1921.
Right, the 19.7 is for that biennium.
Right. What would that number be if this bill did not exist? Do we know?
If it didn't exist, the wolf depredation, rather than costing, well, that would sunset because the bill, the amendment extends the sunset, so that would be zero out in 1921. The biomass manure would also be zero because it sunsets in 2017. The film and video would be about the current law impact. There would be $20 million for the biennium because current law is $10 million, and that is good through 2024. That was extended through 2024 last session. And then the University Venture Development Fund is also sunsetted right now, so there wouldn't be any impact. I'm kind of under, this could be confusing because I'm kind of going back and forth between marginal impacts and current law impacts. So that's almost inherently confusing.
Yeah, I thought these figures were increases in what would be.
Right, that's correct. These are the marginal impacts. These are the impacts of the law, the proposed law change, not the impacts of the programs as they would exist.
So what would that number be then?
If film and video, for example, okay, maybe that's the easy. Film and video is good through 2024, so there's no sunset extension here. And they can issue $10 million in tax credits a year, so that costs about $20 million a biennium. So if 1578 were to become law, that program cost would go from about $20 million in 1921 to $28 million in 2020.
That's where you get $8 million more.
And the other ones it might be a little more difficult because for the most part, they would be zero. They no longer exist.
Assuming we don't extend the
right,
and that's been one of the issues, especially with the biomass one, because the current law, the two policy changes are lowering the rate, which raises revenue,
right,
and extending it, which costs revenue. So if the perspective is the baseline is a $5 million credit going out to whenever, then the $3.5 million only raises revenue. But our perspective for these revenue effects is for current law. So in tax years 2018 and beyond, biomass is cost zero because the tax credit sunsets.
I guess where I'm going with this, Mr. Chair, is, you know, I've always said tax credits is a double-edged sword, you know. I mean, you wind up having to go look for revenue, you know, and it's tough.
They call that initiative position 28.
Yeah.
To your point, though, there's a larger philosophical discussion about doing this in a short session, and that is this process we started 4 years ago with the joint tax credit committees,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, has been a success. It's had some bumps along the road, but it has worked. And so by coming in during the short session and making changes to that process, it could be argued we're dishonoring this process that we thought would help us toe a more efficient line on tax credits. And so I think that's a legitimate point. It was raised to me earlier this week. You lose in the JTAX process, and then you say, well, we'll come in and take another swing in the short session. I don't know if that's a problem. I'm not saying that's inappropriate. It was raised with me. Senator Brockwist? We're thinking out loud here, which is very dangerous.
Yes. Not in my district.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges is that, you know, we like all of us were here, by the way, took this course, but we just kind of arbitrarily put stuff in. And as we remember, because we don't have a clean tax code, you know, there's not set dates, like these things expire like on January 1, and we already know that we have some that are expiring and we're going to go back and try and reinstitute them. So I would agree with that. I'm not sure I agree with. I'm neither a fan of the joint ways and means process at all, nor am I a fan of the joint tax thing.
Well, the one thing that we have with the joint tax credit committee that makes that work is what happened in 2015 when we had an agreed upon number that we couldn't spend over, and that's what forces you to be
disciplined about what tax credits make it or don't make it. And we don't have that on this bill. It's, you know, $20 million and then, you know, and there's no, I mean, these are all wonderful programs. I think they make the mark in terms of providing benefits to Oregonians, but there's no discipline. There's nobody that said, okay, you can only spend $5 million. And, you know, so what we would be doing if we put all of these in here is we would essentially be taking $4 million out of the ending fund this cycle and adding about, $12 million to the budget next biennium, mm-hmm. and $20 million the following biennium.
Yeah. Like you said, Mr. Chair, we're thinking out loud here. So that's where you and I are completely, though we agree on many things and we should continue our cooperation, you and I completely disagree, because I think being blackmailed by the co-chairs of Joint Ways and Means in a political process in which they set a number and they make the policies when there's policy committees and there's tax committees is 180 degrees from what the public expects of this building. Likewise.
But that's how you get the discipline on tax credits, is you have to.
And where is the reciprocal discipline?
Well, the discipline on Ways and Means is you only have so much money. You can't spend any more than you have. And whoever sets that number, and maybe that should be a different process, but whatever, if you have a number, that's the bar you have to meet. And that's what forces you to make hard choices when you're setting up tax credits.
I get that, Mr.
And we don't have that in this bill.
You're right, Mr. I voted against enough bills on the floor that had overbloated budgets that could have been whacked severely that would have helped everybody on everything from environmental projects to children's districts.
Yeah.
So, and if we had that money and it was an open and transparent, you know, process, not in this committee, because this committee and the five old white men that are here actually are pretty open and transparent on tax issues. Yeah, you are. Look at your gray hair, Chris.
I know, I got a lot of gray hair.
Senator Edwards is a baby.
So,
although it didn't show in the picture in the paper.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, that is one of the fallacies of the whole system that's out there.
All right, we do have a few people who want to talk about some of the technical parts of this legislation. First is Sam Barber on the rural health piece.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. I'm Sam Barber, representing the Oregon Rural Health Association. Like Senator Haas said, I'm here to talk about Section 1 of the bill dealing with the rural medical provider tax credit. As you probably remember, last year in 2015, House Bill 2171 made some small changes to the tax credit. Previously, for a provider to be eligible for the credit, they had to be 10 miles as the crow flies from a community of 40,000. House Bill 2171 changed that to 10 highway miles. Those three words, in highway miles, inadvertently added 718 providers to the tax credit. In rural communities such as Clackamas, Gladstone, and Wilsonville, mostly along the 205 corridor. So this is at a cost to the state of about $2.1 million. You will also remember there was another change that involved tiering the credit that saved the state about $2.5 million. This small change essentially negates that those savings that the legislature made. We believe this was not legislative intent to do so, and when we learned of it, we brought it to the attention of Chris Alanak in Legislative Revenue. Like I said, the Section 1 simply removes those three words in highway miles from the bill in order to correct this. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Sam, thank you. I think that that's exactly what the intent is, and there's no issues, I don't think, with fixing that, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make sure, because we thought that was the intent, that's why there's no revenue impact, right, Chris?
That's correct.
Okay. Because we just kind of a technical screw-up, and I didn't catch because I was the one leading that effort. So I'll take fault for that, Mr. Chair. See, I will take blame when blame is due, okay? I do have a question, though, for the witness, just so clear. There was considerable discussion behind the scenes led by the two doctors in the chamber, in the Senate chamber, in terms of another mechanism that might be worked upon using, I believe, federal funds or federal matching dollars or something to possibly replace the state cost of this program in the future. Are you aware of that? Has there been future any discussions since the last legislative session to that matter?
I am aware of that. I have not specifically spoken with the senators regarding that idea, but there is also, I'll remind you, there's the House Bill 3396 that Representative Nathanson brought forward last session that is looking at all incentive programs for medical providers in the state, and there will be a report in the next legislative session regarding all those programs and giving suggestions for their best usage.
And either for Chris or if you know, I mean, the present, I see there's no changes, but, and I don't recall the specific details. What is the present sunset date for the rural medical providers credit right now?
It's extended 6 years, so it should be 2022.
Okay.
Thanks. Kim, thank you very much for coming back today. Appreciate it. Sorry we couldn't get, ran out of time.
Not a problem.
Wendy Johnson.
Chair Hess, excuse me, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. We have a lot of tax credits at issue in this bill. The League has supported several of them that are already kind of in discussion, the biomass tax credit and the film credit. We support both helping with economic development in rural and urban Oregon. But I want to add another one to the list. The transfer of energy tax credits is still a big question mark for some of our cities and local government entities. We're not asking for a change to the program itself, but there's a problem with the formula for how energy tax credits are transferred if you don't have tax liability. So this only applies to local governments and nonprofits. In 2012, the legislature developed this formula for how you calculate what the rate is for a tax credit. And that rate just isn't working for everyone because it's locked in at what the rate was when it was certified, the project. And so it either gives them away too much money when you're done with the project, or meaning the rate that was frozen when it was certified was too low, or the rate at the time of certification was too high, and so now you can't sell it when your project's done. So we would ask that you tweak that formula and have the rate be established at the time the project is finished, so we don't have this problem of some local governments unable to sell their tax credits. They financed the project and did the energy project on the theory that they would be able to get back some of the costs from that credit they received. And we have a list that some of you may have seen of those who are locked in at a rate that's above 89%, some of them as high as 98%. And so those are pretty much unsaleable. And so we're asking for a fix to allow that those credits to be sold. Salem Kaiser, for example, has over $1 million in tax credits that are pretty much unsaleable unless you tweak that. So that's what we're looking for, is just to make that rate determination at the time the project's done, because the formula you establish makes sense. It looks at the market and such to value it, but it just doesn't work in practice because after you have a recession, those rates go back down again, and these people were locked in at those high rates in the 2012-2013 era. And why it's important to fix it now is some of those are about to expire within the next year or so, so it needs to be done now. And my understanding is if you were able to fix it now, it wouldn't have a revenue impact as well, so it'd be in that no impact category. So we'd ask for that fix, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Sure. First, Chris, can you put this into perspective of where we are in this part of it?
The energy, the issue that Wendy is referring to is that the transfer of tax credits, the way statute was set up it was over a few sessions, but as of 2012, the transfer price was set at the time of pre-certification. And the Department of Energy is required to put together a formula. They were granted rulemaking authority to construct a formula to determine the transfer price. And the legislature provided some broad guidelines on how to do that. The Department of Energy is required to update that. The Department of Energy is required to update that on a quarterly basis. So in a nutshell, what has happened is that the transfer price has changed over the years. It has fallen down, and so you have a list of projects that were roughly certified in 2012, 2013, where the transfer price was about 95% or so. So what that means, if I have a $100 tax credit, I have to sell, my sales price is $95. And that's for, we're talking about 5-year tax credits. That formula since then, and in the most recent version, it has fallen and currently is at about 83%. So if I were to take that same project but get it pre-certed today, I'd be allowed to sell it at 83 cents on the dollar rather than my requirement of 95 cents on the dollar. So there are a number of possible changes to address the issue. Well, some people view it as an issue, some people don't.
Sure, and there was this dust-up with the Department of Energy writing their own rules, and they backed down from that. It's not a pretty picture. And Wendy, what are you talking about here in terms of the change that's not in the bill?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, our proposal is a simple fix. One of them that Chris has recommended in other explanations of the situation is just to allow to freeze it or to set the price at the time the project's done, the sale time, because that is the rate today. It just doesn't allow the gamesmanship at all and doesn't make it too expensive or too low. It's what the price should be today. That seems to be the cleanest fix, requires the least number of words. Just set the rate rather than pre-certification rate, today's rate, instead of some 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. Recognizing that local governments may have budgeted based on a different rate, we need to sell it. So that's the real problem. And so we need to sell it at the rate that you can sell it today, and that's the today's rate. So that's what we're asking for.
Problem being is the taxpayers don't get as much return as what they had hoped with this incentive, Senator Boquist.
Of course, the other problem, Mr. Chair, is they can't sell it. They get zero return, right?
Exactly.
Nothing of nothing is nothing.
Right.
But my question is actually more fundamental, and this is not a new topic because I'm familiar that legislators have been meeting on this topic. So the question comes down is there a plan to address this, or is there inconclusiveness amongst the those involved of what to do? I certainly tell you that Oregonian is forthright in its opinion, which isn't exactly sometimes helpful.
Well, it's, you know, nobody has any, there's no great solution here because there's no,
there's certainly not a win-win. It's, you know, settle with what you can get, I think. And then the question for us up here is whether it would be appropriate to make that change in this bill. Senator Riley.
Yeah, first of all, I don't think it's appropriate to make a change in this bill, and I don't think it's the appropriate change. Since we're talking about things out loud, my proposed solution would be simple. Let them sell it at whatever price they can get and make the state gives the state the right of first refusal.
Senator Boquist.
Given they expire, I guess we're up against the cliff someplace out there and the sheep are racing towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll field the question to anybody here, but specifically my colleague, Senator Riley, is there a mechanism out there? Does anybody know of a mechanism out there in which can be used to find a resolution, if there is a resolution, before the sheep run off the cliff, which is before we come back in 2017? I guess that's my question. Is there a relating clause out there? I don't know the answer to this.
No, I don't think so.
I think there's some general finance revenue bills. I know there's at least one in the House.
But what that means, we unfortunately, as I believe I'm hearing my colleague Senator Riley said, he really doesn't want to attach it to anything, but the only solution means we're going to have to attach it to something if we do anything.
Right.
So I agree. Two bads equal two bads.
Yeah, that's why I said there's
not in this session.
Dale Penn, you just walked right up here.
Yes, Senator Haas, thank you very much, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee. Dale Penn with Salem-Keizer Transit. I echo everything that Wendy had mentioned earlier, and I've been following the conversation in previous committee hearings. Just wanted to let you know that Salem-Keizer Transit has a couple of the tax credits in question, and we really view it as an investment we made in some energy initiatives. with the agreement with the state that we'd be allowed to sell those tax credits at a later date. Currently, I think those tax credits sit at about 98-99% value. Very, very difficult to sell. We really appreciate the one of the ideas that Chris from Legislative Revenue brought forward around allowing the Legislative Revenue staff around allowing the tax credits to be valued at current market value. We agree with Wendy that that's an excellent way forward to allow those entities that need to sell those tax credits the ability to do so in the easiest and quickest manner possible, as mentioned, because they do expire in the next year and a half.
Sure. So now let's throw the ball back to Wendy and Dale here. So make sure I understand, and you can restate both of you if you would, please. The problem we have in a nutshell is that the cities and the transit district, at least in your two cases, are sitting on a tax credit that you, for a better word, cannot sell because it's too high and no one will buy it. Mm-hmm. And it's about to run off the cliff or turn into pumpkin soup, which means you're going to lose everything you have into it mm-hmm. if you can't sell it. Is that what you're saying here?
Senator Boquist, Chair Haas, yes, that is exactly the situation we're facing. We made strategic investments, and I know a lot of the members on the ODOE Active Energy Incentive Program project list made those strategic investments with the understanding that they would be allowed to sell this.
Can you give us an example of one that would, the downside here, one specific project in your district?
Well, I know that
happen if there's no action taken in this session.
Well, that's an excellent question, Senator Haas, members of the committee. For Salem-Keizer Transit, as we look down this list, they have two, one of which is $3.7 million of credit and another of 2.6, I believe. The $3.7 million credit, which was started in 2012, the expiration, I believe, is mid next year, probably right around the time legislative session ends. If we were unable to sell that in the next year, that would be $3.7 million that we had budgeted in our
What's the project?
The project was, I believe, bus passes and the credits for those. I can get more specific details for the committee as soon as possible.
Bus passes.
Mm-hmm. The credit for bus passes. And there are others on here that I can get specific details. I know there are several counties, military departments, and others that I can get more specific details on the actual projects and bring those back to the committee.
I think it would be good for the legislature to see what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Is it an overpass? Is it a bus pass?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not as if in all of these cases they go away. Mm-hmm. It's you have to figure out a different way to do it. So, mm-hmm. Senator Wiley, did you have something?
Oh, never mind.
Just Mr. Boquist. I just want to make sure I understand. When you say bus pass, we're not talking about overpass. We're talking like tickets for the bus.
Tickets for the bus. But let me understand that and get back to you guys with details
right,
on that.
Right. Energy. All right, I'm like Senator Riley. I'm going to stop right now.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Chris, did you want to amend one of the things on that table?
There was the question about the current sunset date for the rural medical providers credit, and I misspoke. That one was extended 2 years,
That's
so the current sunset is 2018, not 2022.
Okay. Thanks.
So. Right. So to clarify that, then on the rural, it says no revenue impact. It's no revenue change. The fact of the matter is, right now, it's sunset. It's zero beyond the 2 year date. And I believe we did that because we said, okay, if you're going to come up, study it now and then come up with a better plan, was what we said.
Again.
For the fourth or fifth time.
Okay. Any other questions of Chris or Paul? I really appreciate you guys. Freewheeling is the term we use in this committee to talk about these things out loud. And tomorrow we have the forecast, which will, at least for me, have an impact on where we go with these deals. So thank you guys for a really good discussion. And with no other business before us, we'll adjourn.